Hello and welcome to this edition of Radio Sweden Weekly with me, Michael Walsh. Leva Vichniks here too. Coming up in a while, we'll visit Jävrveckan, a political festival that aims to tackle segregation. But first, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky was in Sweden again this week. Leva, why was he here?
Well, he was here to present a new fighter jet deal together with Sweden's Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson. And they announced that Ukraine will buy 20 of the newest Swedish fighter jets, JAS 39 Gripen. And that as part of the deal, Sweden will donate 16 of the older generation of jets to Ukraine. And this is part of a bigger defense deal in which Ukraine will buy up to 150 of the JAS 39 EF fighter jets eventually. And the two leaders described the deal as a game changer. And we can listen to a little of what they said at the press conference at a military base in Uppsala, which is about 45 minutes north of Stockholm.
These jets, with very specific weapon, and we are very thankful that we will get jets with weapon, not just jets. These jets, Gripen, with specific weapon, especially meteors, missiles, and etc., which can destroy 200 kilometers plus. So we think that we will push out these Russian jets and they will not be able to use massively aerial bombs.
And the Swedish Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson talked about the deal as part of a wider defense cooperation between Sweden and Ukraine.
This agreement is a broader framework in which this deal, this agreement, this purchase and this donation is very well fitted into. But the broader agreement is honestly also on how Sweden can learn from Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine right now has the most advanced capacity to deal with drone wars in Europe. And we are extremely eager to learn from Ukraine how to be able to handle such a situation. So I think when we talk about the need for air defense in a very broad sense, most people perhaps think about the fighters, and they are extremely important, as the president just mentioned. But the fighters are basically a part of a far bigger system of being able to defend yourselves from the most expensive and advanced long-range weapons to the, honestly, the most simple ones, still creating massive destruction. So this agreement is kind of creating a framework for our cooperation.
Swedish PM Ulf Kristersson speaking at the press conference in Uppsala on Thursday. Coming up later in the program, we'll hear about the workers who got mysteriously ill while preparing the ground for a new steel plant in Luleå. But let's look now at the announcement this week by the government and the Sweden Democrats to temporarily halve the cost of monthly travel cards, starting from July 1st across the country. There were plenty of photo ops with Deputy PM Ebba Busch and Ulf Kristersson sitting behind the wheels of a bus, among other things.
Yes, the government says it's a response to the energy crisis caused by the war in Iran. But it triggered a lot of reaction both online and in the press. Our colleague Dave Russell was at the bus depot where they presented the proposal, and Ebba Busch, who's energy minister and leader of the Christian Democrats, told him the measure doesn't have anything to do with the government appeasing voters in an election year.
Well, President Trump's decision to bomb parts of Iran and cause the worst global energy crisis ever in mankind was not a decision related to the Swedish election. And this is a crisis management related to the Hormuz crisis and not the election.
I spoke with an expert on public transport, Alfred Söderberg. He's a researcher at the Research Institute of Sweden, about the timing of this.
It's also reasonable to see this in the context of an election year, of course, since public transport fares are a very visible cost of living issue. Public transport fares are ultimately a political question. It will surely have an impact on the demand for travel with public transport. It's quite a big compensation or a subsidy, so it will increase demand, but the size is quite uncertain and yeah, it's not obvious that it will lead to a large shift from car travel to public transport.
Who would benefit the most from these lowered prices?
People in the margins. So for low-income households, young people, people without access to a car, people who sometimes avoid trips because of costs, for instance. This type of price reductions can matter a lot.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Even if the total increase would be moderate. The welfare effect can be substantial for some groups.
The 50% price drop is substantial, says Alfred Söderberg, and explains that regional changes in public transport pricing could normally be between 10 to 20%, but that there are examples in other countries where prices have been slashed sharply.
The Deutschland ticket in Germany was an even larger subsidy, actually. The research has found in Germany is that it has actually had quite a large effect, that it's been quite a different results from that, I would say. Some argue that it has a large increase in demand, which it surely has, but that increase also has been coming from car travel. It's not easy to predict, actually. It's highly context dependent.
So if we look at the Swedish context, then what kind of a prediction can we make in this case?
There's always some sort of latent demand in the system. People who consider using public transport but don't due to cost. So they will surely use public transport more as a result. But there's also a likely effect that people will switch from buying a single ticket to their monthly travel cards.
Alfred Söderberg explains that if the goal is to get more people onto public transport, investment in the actual service is more effective than lowering ticket prices. And he warns that the new subsidy could mean overcrowding.
Parts of the system which is already crowded, it could be quite unsustainable if the regions don't decide to increase supply. So there will be probably more crowding in already crowded public transport trips. And that's also something you could see from the Germany ticket, that the service level decreased due to higher crowding.
And that was public transport researcher Alfred Söderberg talking about the potential impact of lower costs for monthly travel cards.
There was criticism of the proposal from opposition voices, not against the proposal itself, which was welcomed by the Greens, the Left Party and the Social Democrats, but against the fact that it's temporary and that it comes on short notice. For example, the general secretary of the biggest opposition party, the Social Democrats, Tobias Bardin, told Swedish Radio News that the government has zero credibility proposing a six-month reduction of ticket prices that lasts until just after the election.
Now we switch to another story that's been developing over the past couple of months up in Luleå in northern Sweden. Liv, what's the latest on the workers up there who got mysteriously ill?
So back in April, workers got ill after preparing the soil for construction of a new steel plant that the company SSAB is building. And construction had to be put on pause while they investigated what was happening, but now it's starting up again. I spoke to our colleague Turi Wemberg, who is a reporter at Swedish Radio Local News in Luleå, and she's followed the story since it broke in March, and I began by asking her why SSAB has restarted the work.
Because they have done a great amount of tests. They have tested the soil and also gas emissions, and then the company's conclusion is that the measured values have not exceeded the applicable limit values. And also they say that they now know why people got sick.
Uh-huh. Okay, so why did they get sick?
According to the company, it's a combination of exposure to fine dust particles from construction activities, and that's the primary factor. And they also say that the negative impact of fine dust particles was amplified because of the winter air, which is very dry, so there was very low humidity, and also there was the presence of seasonal respiratory viruses such as COVID-19 and flu and colds.
Mm-hmm, sure. So how many tests have been carried out so far?
The company says that they have done more than 200,000 gas measurements, and also air measurements have been carried out in office spaces and extensive particle measurements. And they have also done 1,700 tests of the soil. But when I asked them how many of these tests were carried out under what we call production-like conditions, that means when the machines are working and something happens, the soil is moving, kind of, they could not answer. We don't know really when they have tested.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and it's a lot of testing, 200,000 measurements.
Yes.
Plus some. So what happens now then?
Yeah, they will start working again and they will have more safety requirements.
And what could that be?
That could be daily health tests and also health testing before the shift starts, so they could compare if something happens during the shift. They know how the person felt before start working, and then they can draw a conclusion if the illness is due to what happened during the work or if it had something to do with the person's condition before. And they will also control more the air in the indoor areas, such as offices and also the spaces where they change clothes before work and after work.
You've covered the story for a while now, or since these problems started happening. What are some of the workers? What have they told you?
Yeah, I spoke to one of them mostly, and also the syndicate representatives. Mm-hmm. And this person, he is very ill. He is the one that has been most seriously ill of this work. It's not easy to understand why he reacted so severely as he did, because he had lots of problems with his lungs and also with his heart, and he cannot work. He has been now, I think it's 10 weeks or something, maybe more. He has been on a sickness leave. So, yeah.
So he won't go back, or he will eventually?
No, I don't think he will go back. I don't think even if he could that he would, because I think he, as ill as he was, I think you get afraid as well.
What about the other workers? Are they worried about going back to work?
I haven't spoken to them, but I've been talking to the union, the trade union, and it seems like they mostly are going back to work. And the trade unions say that they expect the company to have the safety requirements that are needed. And we don't know really what that means. I tried to ask them the other day, and it seems like they haven't decided yet. But I know that last week they tried to carry out tests with the workers in the machines, and then the workers had to have these kind of space almost like, you know, when you go to out into space.
Wow, so, like space suits basically.
Yeah, almost really covered. And now we are going, it's almost summer. I mean, it will be very, very warm to work like that. And also they need gas masks with filters, so that they won't get particles in the when they breathe.
The company SSAB, what are they saying? What the impact of this long pause? What kind of impact has it had on their operations?
According to them, it hasn't had any impact economically or planning wise. They say that they can continue because they worked on theoretically during the pause, so it should not affect the budget or the overall schedule for this project.
And that was Trudy Vanbadi, reporter at the local Swedish radio station in Luleå in northern Sweden, speaking there. Now let's talk about something a lot of people in Sweden, including myself, have to put up with during spring and summer, namely pollen allergies.
Around 3 million people in Sweden have hay fever, and that's roughly 30% of the population. And that's a figure that's gone up by around a quarter since the 1990s. I spoke to Christer Jansson, a professor and allergologist at Uppsala University Hospital, and he pointed out that the same trend has been observed across Europe, though allergy types vary.
We think it's related to climate change and that the annual temperature has increased in Sweden, and we also see that parallel to that, there has been an increase in pollen levels in our country. If you're in South Europe, you're probably allergic to house dust mite to a much larger extent than in Sweden. Whereas in Sweden, it's tree pollen play a really big part, and especially allergy to birch pollen. And that's something that happens to people when they move to Sweden, and they suddenly get exposed to these high levels of birch pollen, then they might develop birch pollen allergy, and that's quite common. They probably discover that they have a runny nose and runny eyes, and also itch, because itching is pretty typical for allergies. And if they're really unlucky, they will also develop asthma, and they will have that from maybe March to June, if it's a tree pollen allergy. If they also have grass pollen allergy, it will go on July to August. Mm-hmm. So it really makes your spring and summertime here in Sweden a bit less nice.
Not all hope is lost, though, says Christiansson.
There are really good treatments for this. Most people, they will be okay if they take an antihistamine pill once per day. Other people, they need nasal medications and some eye drops containing antihistamines or another substance called chromoglycate.
Christiansson explains that roughly 1 out of 10 of those with pollen allergy will benefit from allergy vaccination. The patient takes a pill containing pollen daily for about 3 years to build up resistance towards the allergen. Unlike treatments of nut allergies with nuts, which only works on children, the pollen allergy vaccine works for all ages.
People who are allergic to pollen, they're often allergic to foods that grow on trees, apples, peaches, and such things, and also to other things, a bit surprising, like kiwi and carrots. The usual symptom is you get itchy feeling in your mouth and throat, and it's never really related to severe reactions, but it can be, of course, be a bit troublesome.
Speculating on how we'll deal with pollen allergy in the future, Christiansson explains that it's the same way that people have shown to respond well to early exposure of specific allergens. Perhaps similar treatments of pollen allergy could help bring down the numbers in the future. There's even a study done on pollen allergy in children in the north of Sweden, where the allergy seemed to have plateaued.
Maybe we have reached like a ceiling effect, that people who are likely to develop pollen allergy has done that now. Maybe it won't increase.
That was Christiansson, allergologist at Uppsala University Hospital. This week, the event Järveveckan got off the ground, almost literally. Storms on Wednesday shut it down as the tents almost blew away in strong gusts, but they soon passed and on Thursday, things got back to normal. For decades, Sweden has had the Almedalen tradition. That's an event during the summer where basically the whole of political Sweden relocates to the Baltic island of Gotland and where party leaders hold speeches and seminars and maybe drink the odd glass of rosé. In an election year, it's where many of them present their pre-election promises. And Järveveckan is similar, but it's held in the Järve area of northwest Stockholm, close to suburbs like Rinkeby, Tensta and Husby. These are places with a large immigrant population and high unemployment. And Liv, you went down there as they were setting it up.
Yeah, so it's an event that the organisers hope will bring together people, politicians and business leaders in the area. And the man behind this whole event is Ahmed Abdirahman. He founded Järveveckan 10 years ago with the aim to impact segregation. And I met up with him on Tuesday before the event opened.
People come together, young and older, different backgrounds. And that's what makes Järveveckan extremely unique in Sweden. In a time where, sadly, the physical and mental segregation is far bigger than what we want to admit. Democracy depends on our belief in the system, and our belief in the system and the social contract has to be manifested. We have to make sure that our values are exercised not online, not only in parliament, but out in the open space, like especially like places like this, where people with different backgrounds congregate. You cannot say diversity inclusion is important in the boardroom and in the papers. You have to be out here.
Born in Mogadishu, Ahmed Abdirahman moved from Somalia to Sweden at the age of 11 and went to school not far from where we're standing. After college in the US and a stint working for an NGO in Geneva, Ahmed Abdirahman returned home to Stockholm and set up Järveveckan.
So I came back after many years abroad, almost 7-8 years, very humbled, understanding that this is my home and this is where I have responsibility. This is the country that gave me a lot of things. So I felt that I should engage. I should not just point and say it doesn't work, this segregation, discrimination. I have met people through my life in the US and around the world, and it just shows you meeting human to human, it's far more important. So I decided to create a meeting space using our diversity as a strength rather than as something negative. It started with the outdoor cinema exactly over there in the grass. And it grew to involve politicians, where we asked them, come and say a few words before the children movie, Disney movie, start playing. And that's how Järveveckan was created, a chance for our politicians who never had a chance to understand most of the time they always hear about the problem. They don't see most of the time, if they don't train or, make an effort, it's hard to see the positive when in 2015, 2016, crime was increasing, immigrant and migration became something that's completely negative rather than something positive. So it was important for us to invite them and say, come say a few words, get to know all these wonderful kids from all around the world, including from our neighbors here. And that's where Järveken started.
470,000 people are first-time voters in the upcoming elections in Sweden, and this year's Järveken focuses on young voters, which of course also can be found in and around the event in an area that in parts is considered segregated. Foreign-born Swedes make up 17% of the electorate in Sweden. It's a group in which voting participation has fallen over the past 30 to 40 years. Ahmed Abdirahman talks about segregation as an invisible wall that Järveken aims to tear down.
On the right side of me, which is inhabited by hundreds of thousands of people from all around the world, first and second generation new Swedes. On the other hand, on my left side is area where it's inhabited by Swedes who have been here for many, many years, generations, who are economically and socially better, well off, compared to the new generation who are growing up on this side. So this is also a manifestation of the invisible wall. Being in here is an invitation for both sides, both worlds that are inheriting this Sweden of tomorrow to come together and create what Sweden is supposed to be in the future.
Järveken has over the years become known for being an event where politicians hold speeches, but even so, it hasn't always been easy to attract big name speakers.
It's not always easy. We have to have an understanding that politicians are also facing a lot of threat, a lot of violence. To be a politician, we have 349 in the parliament, and we live in a huge country, and we are 10 million people. So, of course, it's not easy to find always time. But we believe that despite those challenges of time management, despite challenges of not always feeling secure to meet new people, that there's also a responsibility that falls if you are elected, whether you are politicians or whether you are in other forms of power. And that is to be a role model, to inspire people.
What about our current prime minister then, Ulf Kristersson? Will he show up?
Sadly not. And we are, of course, very saddened by that news. We, of course, understand that it's not easy with time. But we really hope that he will be here in the future. But right now we are definitely saddened by that, because I really believe that as a prime minister is the highest office in Sweden, the highest representation of our elected officials, and we are 50 minutes from here. So not able to visit here, even though you may not be able to give a speech, even that symbolic gesture has a meaning. As a politician, as leaders, we have a responsibility, even when it's hard, even when time is not enough, even when we don't agree, that we should be out in areas like this to show that Sweden is possible for all of us, no matter where we come from. It's not enough to say it. You have to practice it.
And that was Ahmed Abdirahman, who's the founder of Järveken, which concludes on Saturday this week.
And this week, Swedish pop star Sara Larsson's been recognized at the American Music Awards. Her album Midnight Sun won in the category Breakthrough Album of the Year, while her collab with the UK's Pink Panthers on the song Stateside won Collaboration of the Year. We played Stateside not so long ago, so this time we'll leave you with Midnight Sun. Thanks for listening.
Hej då!
Can still see the light.